Our next scripture reading is taken from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verses 1 through 14. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The Word of the Lord.
Well, are you ready for the best Christmas ever? Are you are you ready for an amazing, mind-blowing, unforgettable time of joy and peace and children who are gently going to sleep when they're supposed to, and they wake until a decent hour to get up and they come down and see the glow of the tree like it's a scene from a movie? Are you ready for that? Have you had the incredible parties, the perfect, unforgettable gift that was just the right thing for the loved one that made them know how deeply you could peer in their soul and know exactly what they wanted? Is your house decorated like a Christmas card that you receive? If you're not, I can talk to you. If you are, you deserve a break and you can sleep for a few minutes. Do you feel the pressure for Christmas to be amazing and wonderful and stupendous and the best one ever? I mean, when you're 10, it's not hard for each one to be the best one ever. But at 42, and so I have the stress. I have the stress of overhearing one kid tell my child about the wonderful, cute things your children's Elf on the Shelf does. And they've probably told you, my Elf on the Shelf really likes the mantle. He's been there a week. Robin was very proud. She remembered to get cupcakes on the way to a class party. And she's greeted with an array of Pinterest, Martha Stewart type cupcakes. I don't think she went to the staff lounge and stole their cupcakes to give. That's what I would have done. And then I'm thinking, it's too late for us to get Christmas cards with the kids' pictures. And I get wonderfully cute Christmas cards. I'm thinking of you, Morgan and Chris. And I just feel inadequate. And can I just, let me confess, Christmas and Easter, every year, we have the same text to preach from, and we're expected to knock it out of the park. It took me 3 years to catch on. By definition, every sermon cannot be above average. Some of y'all can think about that. But the thing is, I think we get ourselves pressured for everything to be amazing, everything wonderful, everything glorious. And I'm going to read a quote from Michael Horton's book, Ordinary. Today we feel the pressure to have our weddings look like the cover of a bridal magazine or movie set. Our marriages have to be made in heaven, even though we're very much on earth. our presentations at work have to dazzle, our kids to have to make the dean's list and get into the best graduate school. Academic research can't just contribute to knowledge in a field. Nothing short of brilliant and groundbreaking will satisfy if you want a good job. When we do stop and smell the roses, it has to be an unforgettable package at an amazing resort. It's not enough to enjoy recreation at the public park, but extreme sports are what really interest us. Do you feel the pressure for everything to be amazing and wonderful and mind-blowing? I'm not against excellence. The Bible calls us to do what we do with excellence. And I'm not making fun of those of you who are wonderfully talented and skilled and have the ability to reach out with a warm home and to do things that bring joy to people. I'm not trying to suggest that every creative thing done and every gift that brings a smile and makes our life better is done just to impress people. But I want you to think about, if you feel that pressure at times to do an amazing and wonderful, incredible for everything and for everything to always be better than the one before, what is it, Ruth, there? Could it be not just our pursuit of excellence, but maybe it's our need to justify ourselves, our need to measure up to a standard and prove that I am a good parent, to prove that I am excellent at my work, to prove that I'm worth something because I'm worth something to a friend or to families, and to do something that shows I'm worthwhile. Maybe for you it's not Christmas. Maybe it's standard at work or relationships, romantic relationships, family relationships. But I think almost everyone I meet, or a whole bunch of people I meet, has a low-grade sense of guilt of not reaching up to some sort of standard. I think many of us feel that way. Many of us, if not a low-grade sense of that, maybe some of us just some sense of guilt or some sense of regret or some sense of failure because I ought to lose a few pounds. I ought to get with this person I haven't talked to in a while. I ought to be a better parent. This magazine says I should be feeding them this kind of stuff. I ought to do this at work. I ought to not need to do the things that I do. We feel the need to do something to be worth it. And if we do that, we'll never measure up. The problem is our hearts are made for God. And anything that we can make, anything that we could fashion, anything that we could obtain will not satisfy God, that God emptiness in us. As Augustine said, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. You will never measure up to the standard of God. And I find the wonderful irony of when I feel inadequate at Christmas is this is a story not of the ordinary trying really hard and become extraordinary. It's the story of an extraordinary God humbling himself and entering into ordinary life with us. We want to build towers to heaven. He enters a manger. We all want to overcome our enemies in our strength, and he comes in weakness. We want to make a name for ourselves, and he comes with a very common name in a town we wouldn't have never heard of if he hadn't have been born there, to some people that were not well-known and popular and celebrities. God comes to us. God comes to us in an ordinary birth. I love all Christmas songs, but away in a manger lies. He was not no crying he made. This was an ordinary baby who cried. There were dirty diapers. There was silliness at 7 or 8 years old. There was energy. There was growth. There was the ordinary stuff that we deal with. He was visited by ordinary shepherds, and the people we call as wise men were much closer to bureaucrats and academic nerds than the kings we call them in songs. He was in an ordinary village. He was a carpenter, an ordinary trade. And when he called people to follow him, he got disciples and people who were accountants doing ordinary work. And he did most of his work through meals and conversations and celebrations with friends. And he gives you a very ordinary church. He gives you grace from a sinner reading from a book and talking, from water, no, the font's gone, the water, and from a meal of bread and wine. And the birth of Jesus means you don't have to reach up to God. He's already come down to you. Do your best. Pursue excellence. Make good cupcakes or banana pudding. Make your home a place of welcome. But at the end of the day, when you feel like you don't measure up, you don't have to. Rest in the one that did. Rest in the Christ who was God, who came into the ordinary midst of people like us.